Hello, welcome to Cinemaniac Jack. I'm your host, Jack. Today's guest co-hosts are John and Keith. How are you guys today?
Tired, but good.
Doing pretty all right. I'm drinking orange juice, so.
Orange juice. That's such a lightweight drink. I admire it, though. I mean, if I'm really sick, I'll have orange juice, but otherwise, I'm not a huge proponent. I'm not a huge proponent of oranges nor juice.
So basically, the gist of the show is that we talk about films that I love based on whatever the topic of the episode is. And in the first half of the show, I talk to my guests about whatever the topic is. So today's topic is a film that you first watched in high school. And the movie I chose is The Godfather. But first, John and Keith are going to tell us the films that they first watched in high school. Should we have... Who would like to go first, Keith or John?
I'll go first, if you want. I've talked about this movie before. Orphan came out in 2009, and it's one of my favorite horror movies just because it's so shocking. It's basically, like, to sum it up, this little girl has this, like, disease where she's really a 33-year-old woman trapped in a little girl's body, and she's, like, a murderer, and she gets adopted by this, like, nice couple, and she just, like, wreaks havoc and does all this horrible shit. And they're actually making a sequel to it that's supposed to come out where the actress now is like in her 30s and she's like still portraying this little girl through CGI, which I think is very interesting. But it's like a camp classic, and you should watch it. It's very good. You've seen it, right?
Yeah, I have seen it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
very strange movie.
No, it is strange, but it's good. Very strange. Like I love the idea of, like, could you imagine you go to the orphanage or the adoption agency, you adopt this little girl and you're like, oh, she's wonderful. Then all this shit starts to go wrong little by little. And you realize that she's really like a 33-year-old like murderer trapped in this little girl's body. A bunch of adoption agencies after the film dropped actually like criticized the film in like a press release because apparently adoptions went down after the film came out, because I think people were so spooked out. They're like, I don't want to adopt a child who's like Esther in the
movie. Yeah, I was just gonna say, I was gonna ask you if that happened.
Yeah at all. I mean, I don't know, I would adopt
after watching that movie. It's like what Showers or what, yeah, like what Psycho did for Showers, probably like what
Orphan did for adoption
agencies. Yeah.
Those poor orphans.
I mean, the fact that you kind of mentioned that, I don't know, like I've heard of similar kinds of things where movies will have some sort of impact in real life. The example for me that comes to mind is Top Gun. After that movie came out in the 80s, Air Force recruitment agencies were like filled to the gills, and like everyone wanted to be a fighter pilot, but like the qualifications were like so high, like not everybody made it, but like people were like so jazzed on that movie.
And now the new one's coming out like imminently, right? The new Top Gun sequel. Tom Cruise is such a fucking weirdo, but he manages to look so young, and he's so like old now, you know.
Yeah,
is it plastic surgery, good genes? Do you think he just takes care of himself? I don't know.
But anyway, what's your film? What's your first film, Keith?
The first film that I wanted to discuss, the one that I saw in high school, was Clerks. I want to say it was made in, I want to say, like 92 or 93 or something like that. But it definitely had an impact on me in high school. So, you know, for any of the listeners that haven't seen the movie, it's a movie about a guy who works a convenience store job, and he's called in on his day off. Like he has to, and we've all been there before. And he doesn't want to go, but he goes ahead and he does it. And he has a hockey game later on. And, you know, he is, his friend, his other coworker works at the neighboring convenience store. It's like kind of both owned by like the same person. He comes in, he generally is just, causes a ruckus, in general. And the two characters, the main character is Dante and the other character is Randall. And everybody aspires to be Randall that sees that movie. And it was a movie that kind of first started introduced me to some of the independent films that, you know, came out. Like, that was it's regarded as one of the best indie movies that have come out of all time. And it was filmed here in New Jersey by the New Jersey legend, Kevin Smith. And, you know, getting back into it, like, if you really wanted to kind of micro it, I mean, there's a lot of raunchy humor in there for sure. But you can actually find, there's some literary reference in between all the dick jokes. So the thing that I always compare it to is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, I never thought of it that way. That's such an interesting analysis of it. Yeah.
Right. So in sort of the play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Like, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are two side characters in Hamlet who are essentially like diplomats that are called into the scene. And in the play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Of course, they're killed, but they kind of go on about this whole thing about, like, you know, they are summoned. They are summoned as diplomats, but they don't really have to go. And there's never really if I'm remembering correctly, there's no real clear reason as to why they have to go. And I made that comparison a lot to Dante, who, you know, his boss calls him in and, you know, he ends up doing the whole shift and, he's stuck at work like all day, but, you know, you can really kind of see the existential dread in it. You know, you're kind of stuck behind a counter making minimum wage, and then, you know, you have better things that you want to be doing. And it had an impact on me because I was just like thinking, like, well, you know, I should really try my best to make good choices about what I do with my time. And after recently seeing Everything Everywhere All at Once, like, that kind of like also like reaffirmed it, like, you know, your choices
that
matter.
So stuff. Good. Everything, yeah. Everywhere. Side I just note, want to give a side really note. That movie was really good. I mean,
yeah.
We both looked at each other after the movie and we're like, that was worth watching. You know, Michelle, you don't know how to pronounce it. Young. I mean, she was outstanding. I mean, I thought her performance was outstanding. The daughter was great. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee Curtis was funny. I mean, it just really was like really well done, you know?
Yeah.
Well done cinema. That is why we go to the movies. We Correct. Go to the movies to feel, to learn. Heartbreak feels good in a place like this. Have you seen the AMC Nicole Kidman ad by now?
Yeah, it's great.
I just want to give shout out. It is life-changing. I quote it all the time. I want to get like a t-shirt or something with this. Heartbreak feels good in a place like this, or a mug or something. But it's camp. It's brilliant. I think it got nominated for an award or something, like an advertisement.
Oh, really?
Award. Yeah, because it's so funny. Good.
What was your next film, Keith?
Okay. So another film that I saw in high school, was around the time that it came out, was Talladega Nights with Will Ferrell.
Want to know a fun story just to show your age and show my age?
Sure.
For my 10th birthday party, my parents took me and like 10 of my friends to go see Talladega Nights. It was so inappropriate. I might not have been 10. I must have been younger. But like, my parents did not know that the movie would be so raunchy with Sacha Baron Cohen kissing Will Ferrell. You know, like, it just, you have to understand the 2000s was a wildly different time culturally compared to today. So needless to say, I think one of the parents called my mom and was like, there were two men kissing in that movie or something, like just crazy.
Oh my God. I mean,
my parents exhibited horrific judgment taking me and 10 of my friends to go see that movie in the theater. And I love telling that story. It was on TV recently and I looked at them. I'm like, you people are morons. I like told them, I'm like, how could you not vet that movie before taking me and all my friends to go see Talladega Nights for my birthday? And we all had popcorn and soda. You know when you could like rent out the theater in the old days?
Yeah.
Oh, it was great.
Well, anyway.
Shake and bake.
Yeah, that movie is just, it's so wacky. You know, but it was kind of coming off of the coattails of Will Ferrell's Anchorman, which, you know, I don't know if you ever saw the tweet, but, you know, it was like before memes came out, we just quoted Anchorman at each other for like 7 years. And that's just kind of what it was. Like, you know, Anchorman and Talladega Nights were just these like endlessly quotable
movies.
You just saw some of the behind the scenes stuff. And this movie just looked so fun to me. And just the way that you know, each character kind of bounces off each other. Like, it's sort of weird because, like, you know, John C. Reilly, he's kind of, you know, he's really doing a lot of the jokes. And I would want to say that Will Ferrell's, like, kind of the straight man, but he's not at the same time. But I think just a lot of the dialogues, he kind of, you know, dons the you know, has the lines of a straight man. But, like, watching the movie, like, Ricky Bobby is this larger-than-life race car driver that sees himself in, you know, as like, the best driver ever. You know, it's just a really funny parody of, like, you know, just hubris. Like, it's a parody of sports movies.
You know. America. It's a parody. It's a commentary on America, I think. Like, when I watch that movie, I think this is what it's like for, like, NASCAR fans in the South. And, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, it just really paints a good picture of that sort of culture.
There's
no doubt. No, you realize it's satire. But at the same time, the satire has to be based on something.
Exactly.
Like, when they all pray around the table. And they're like, he's talking about baby Jesus. That's a great scene. When they're in the Applebee's, you know, that's another good scene. Yep.
Gosh. I was in, you know, at work. There was a vice president that told me, like, if you're not first, you're last. And, yep.
But that just shows the cultural impact of the movie, that the frickin' vice president of your company is, like, quoting it like it's gospel. If you're not first, you're last.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, I'm going to say that at my job to people who call on the phone. I'll be like, if you're not first with your subscription this year, you're not getting your tickets, you're last. God.
You should give it a go.
Yeah.
But yeah, that just a really fun, zany movie. There are certain movies that... Well, frankly, there are a lot of movies that fit this category, but a Saturday afternoon movie, that's like a perfect Saturday afternoon movie to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
Do we have time for one more?
Yeah, do you have
another one? I want him to do one more. I find his movie so much more interesting because he's a little older. I think you, because you're a little older, you have a unique perspective, so I'd like you to pick one more. I'm just curious.
No, okay. What do you pick? I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Yeah, so I mean, I guess I did two comedies. One with Clerks, which is, you know, an indie comedy, dark comedy, whatever you want to call it. And Talladega Nights is a comedy that's, you know, as kind of more as we know it. I would say that the other pick that I had for today was The Matrix.
So how old were you when The Matrix came out then? You must have been...
So I was a little bit too young to see it when it came out in 99. But I had acquired it at a Blockbuster from a person who just didn't bother to check IDs or whatever. So I was like, yeah, I bought it. You know, I had a bit of facial hair, so I guess it seemed convincing enough for the guy wasn't getting
paid. Now that is a 90s sentence. I got it at Blockbuster.
Yeah.
If you said that to kids today, like, I had to explain the concept of Blockbuster to one of my students, one of my piano students, like, a month ago. She didn't understand the idea of it. Like she physically could not comprehend that there were physical stores where you would, like, the DVD wasn't even DVDs, it was a VCR, where the tape wasn't yours to keep it. You were merely renting it. It's not like you were purchasing it for forever, you know, for ownership. You had to give it back. And she's like, but what if I didn't want to give back Encanto? And I'm like, but you would have to. You would get, like, fines and other stuff.
Exactly. Like, you wouldn't be able to rent there again the next time you wanted to watch, you know, Die Hard or whatever movie you chose.
Be kind, rewind.
Be kind, rewind. You know, and one of my favorite sort of memes I've ever seen, really just kind of aging me a little bit, is, you know, Blockbuster used to have the keychain barcode on there that would scan in, like, you know, bring up all your account information and stuff like that. So there was someone at basically the skit goes that, you know, someone was getting carded for liquor at a liquor store. They put their keys on the counter, and the guy says like, oh, no, you're good. Like, wait, you didn't see my ID. He's like, yeah, I saw the Blockbuster thing on your keychain. You're fine.
Oh, if only it was that easy.
Right?
Yeah.
What was it about the Matrix that resonated with you, Keith?
Oh, man. Just a lot. Like, you know, I don't know if I could really wax poetic on something about the Matrix that hasn't already been said, but I think it's just one of those movies that really kind of, you know, sometimes you have like an album or a movie that really hits you at the right point mm-hmm. in your life. And, you know, just this whole sort of like meditative sort of like Zen light philosophy of, you know, freeing your mind and like kind of like allowing yourself to sort of get into a flow state, you know, one of the things that I always try to do, like just to, you know, if ever I'm like, you know, nervous or anxious or something like that, I always try to, you know, sort of ground myself and sort of like free my mind from the, you know, the fear, doubt, and disbelief as Morpheus would say in the scene where like he's trying to jump from building to building. I mean, that's just speaking on the writing of it. Technologically, when that movie came out, was like insane. No one, like, you're just watching these visual effects and you're just like, how did they even do that? They invented bullet time for that, which is, you know, they, you know, watching the DVD, watch the special features behind the scenes and about how they're using these high speed cameras to capture like, you know, thousands of images per second and really nail some of these effects. And, you know, like later on, I feel like there was a, even like stylistically and costume choice wise, there was certainly a bit of a ripple effect of that in the early 2000s where, you know, there seemed to be like, you know, cool people wearing trench coats and sunglasses doing kung fu. You know, I'm thinking of a really crappy movie called X versus Sever. Like that movie sucks, but like you could tell watching it that the producer or the director was like, yeah, you know, it'd be really cool if we made The Matrix, but like a lot less cool.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, The Matrix, like even then, like I just, you know, I'll pop it in every once in a while. I'm like kind of going through a funk and I'm like, oh man, like, you know, this is so hard or whatever. You just kind of pop it in. You just have to sort of believe, you know, kind of help me to, I would say it like help me believe in myself, but it kind of shows you a way. It's like, you know, you don't need to necessarily live your life in, you can live amazingly. I mean, granted, I can't do kung fu and I can't like, you know, jump between buildings and stuff like that. That would be sweet. The laws of physics, unfortunately, are sort of, you know, pushing me down, but yeah, I mean, there was just a lot of philosophical elements to it, and there's really just a lot of different angles that you can kind of, you know, dissect it with. But yeah, that's definitely like one of my favorites, regarded as one of the best sci-fi movies of all time. And on Teenage Keith, definitely had a huge impact on him. So, shoot, I might watch that like this weekend or like later.
I might never actually seen it. How sick is that?
Yeah.
No, never.
Oh my gosh! If I could see it for the first time again, I would
do that. Yeah.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Well, we should get started.
Yeah, we're ready to get into it.
Yeah.
So today we're talking about The Godfather. I didn't write like a synopsis or anything.
We all know what it's about.
Yeah,
I mean, come on.
So, but basically, yeah. So. This was a movie that I first saw in high school, and basically, I mean, the story is just that, like, I took a film class. I mean, it wasn't really, I wouldn't say that it was like a film class. We didn't learn like any of the technical elements of filmmaking. We just kind of like sat and we watched movies, and then we would like have to like write like a short like paper on it and stuff like that. And one of the movies that our teacher showed us was The Godfather. You know, I always knew what it was, you know, growing up, that it was like one of the most famous movies ever made. Never saw it before, and it didn't disappoint. And it's like one of my, you know, it's one of my favorite movies to this day. And it's one of those movies that I don't know. For some reason, it's like it's hit a nerve with like everybody. And I know that this was your first time watching it, Keith. What did you think of it?
Oh, you had never seen it? Oh.
The movie itself was just incredible. Like, I really wasn't ready for it.
Really?
Like, I don't know.
You had never seen it, like, in all honesty. I never.
Wow. No.
It's so good.
What was it about it that you were just so, like, that you didn't think you were ready for it?
Like, not that I wasn't, I don't know, not ready for it is probably not exactly the best way to explain it, but I mean, you know, going on to like the first couple of scenes, like, you know, one of the things that I can sort of like circle back to a little bit was Francis Ford Coppola, but, you know, just really just the art style and the direction, you know, the costuming was really great, and really just, you know, the whole idea of, you know, family and betrayal, like it's, you really kind of do what you have to do to, you know, to make things work for you. And, it was just kind of shocking. But getting back to sort of like Francis Ford Coppola, you know, one of the things that really kind of struck me, and if I'm not mistaken, was that his first movie?
I
don't believe so. No.
Yeah, no. He had made
a few others.
A few others before this, actually. That's interesting.
What did he before then?
Finian's Rainbow, You're a Big Boy Now, Dementia 13, Battle Beyond the Sun. His main success occurred after The Godfather. I've heard of The Conversation, the Apocalypse Now. I've heard of,
Apocalypse Now happened later, though, right?
Yeah, that was
much later, yeah. Wrote The Great Gatsby, really? He wrote that 70s version with Mia Farrow. Interesting. Huh. Okay.
The comment that I sort of want to make on it, like, at least from my understanding, like, The Godfather was his breakout success. And, you know, I'm just kind of, you kind of watch movies now and you kind of know, like, you know, certain people just do certain things, you know, certain things well. Like, you know, Rian Johnson with The Last Jedi, not so great. Rian Johnson with Knives Out, great. You know, Rian Johnson's a great character guy. But with Francis Ford Coppola, he was kind of an unknown quantity at the time. And I don't know. It's I just kind of wish that Hollywood would be able to make, I guess, take a little bit more risk on some of these like more unknown quantities, because, you know, you get these movies that happen like once in a generation. And I just feel like they're just out there just waiting to be made right now. And you know, circling back, like, you know, it's the reason we go to movies. Like, I would say that, yeah, it was incredible. It's the reason why you would go and see a movie to begin with. And I'm happy that, like, he's kind of really kind of pushed this art as far as he thought he could. I haven't seen the second one. I haven't seen the third one. Folks told me to sort of avoid the third one. I don't know if you guys can make any comment on that.
I've never seen the third
one. Yeah, I haven't seen
the third one either. I deliberately have not watched the third one.
Just because of its bad reputation. I'll probably get around to watching it someday.
I prefer thinking the movie doesn't continue after number two. I just, like, I don't know, for my own sanity, I'm just like, yeah, after number two, it ended. And the characters live off forever.
I mean, I just wanted to say, too, that, like, I feel like this really is just, like, one of those, like, perfect movies. And I don't, like, this is, like, one of those, like, perfect, like, five-star movies. And I don't really, like, give a lot of movies, like, five stars. But, like, this one is definitely it. Like, I don't know, like just, like, when me and you, John, were watching it a few days ago.
After it was done, we both just looked at each other. We're like, yeah.
I don't know. It's just like one of those movies where
it gets,
like,
5 stars. I mean, but what's crazy is that Lightning struck twice, and the second one is better than the first one, I think.
Well, you could make the argument.
You know, you could make the argument, but it's just crazy to me that the second one is just as good quality-wise as the first one. But yeah, it really is perfect. All the elements of the movie come together. The performances are so strong. The dialogue is so strong. So much iconic dialogue. The score, the music, I really do think plays such a role in the movie, you know. I hear like the tarantella, the dance where it's like da 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 da. Like I hear it, even though in the wedding scene, the music playing, and of course the main theme is so famous. But I think the music really helps you get in the mood of watching it.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's the Italian wedding in the beginning, like. You know, just watching it and just sort of like taking a couple of notes on it. And I've, of course, you know, growing up in New Jersey, I know like a couple of Italian people, you know, and a lot of, there are some folks that have made some comments on that scene in particular, saying that like, you know, with like, sort of like the costuming and the dance and just the music and stuff like that, it just, you know, really had the feel of this sort of like, you know, almost like this old world Italian thing. Of course, the wedding takes place in the United States, but, you know, you just kind of, I don't know, that movie just had a huge impact. And, you know, I, you know, going a little bit further. Yeah. I mean, like it's the Italianness of it is pretty spot on in many ways. And I'm not trying to like stereotype or anything like that. You know, I'm sure there, you know, plenty of Italians that out there, they're like, no, like I'm not about that. And like, yeah, no, it's fine. You know, it's totally fine. But, you know, just, the whole concept of, you know, these Sicilian crime families existing for generations. And then just like, you know, the generation continuing on is just like, it's a good movie. It's just dang near perfect.
Yeah. And it's really like interesting because like, I mean, I'm like one of the themes of the movie is just kind of like how, you know, like these Italian families like trying to find their place within America and how, you know, they were treated, as a result. And this movie does like the second one kind of touches on that, I think, a little bit
with more. The Ellis Island scenes and stuff.
Yeah. But I think the movie is also like as far as like themes go, like it's just a great film. Like people always say how it's like about how like how a man, like a study of like how a man changes. But I think it's also kind of like, I think it's also kind of, you could see it as like how a story about like how like evil is born and like how a person becomes the bad guy. I mean, there's been a lot of other movies based on that idea, but I don't know. For some reason, this one, it hits a little differently. I don't know. What's your take?
Yeah, it's like, it's an American tragedy. No. I think it is a good character study, especially Michael Corleone as a character. It just shows how you can't stay away from something you're destined for. Like, he tried his hardest not to be like the rest of his family. But at the end of the day, he was always going to get sucked into the family business. There was no way he was ever truly going to avoid being in the mob,
because in reality he was the only one that could continue the legacy, because there was no way that Fredo could do it, or Sonny could do it, or even Tom could do it. It was only gonna be him, you know.
Yeah, it's how evil is born. That's an interesting way to kind of look at it. Like it's, it's almost like, you know, he's like sort of, I don't know.
I don't necessarily view it as evil. I view it as retribution. I mean, they killed Sonny. Carlo helped get the hit put out on Sonny. So Sonny got shot up that way. Mm-hmm.
the other families are the ones who shot up Vito, you know, Marlon Brando. So I do see it as an eye for an eye a little bit. So I don't necessarily view Michael's actions in this movie as evil.
I mean, killing people is evil.
I mean, there's levels.
I mean, I get that. Like,
there's levels, though. See, but I don't hold any of that against Michael in this movie. The second movie, on the other hand, no. He does a lot of messed up stuff there. Not even going to touch it. But in this movie, I give him a lot more leeway, I feel like, in terms of the morality scale.
Yeah, but he becomes such a different person by the end of the movie. Like, he starts out, I mean, he's not like extremely different. I mean, his personality is the same, but like his beliefs are completely different by the end of the movie. Yeah, I mean, Al Pacino is just great in this movie.
Yeah.
And, like, if I was around him, like, I would not want to fuck with him. Let's just say that. Like, you know?
I wouldn't want to fuck with any of the characters in the movie. The thing about Al Pacino's portrayal of Michael Corleone, as well as Marlon Brando, I think both of them deserve this praise, is they feel like fully three-dimensional humans. Do you ever watch an actor in a movie where there's, like, no characterization whatsoever? It's like,
yeah,
you can tell the director did not give a shit about this character or their motivations, what they want, what they hate, their desires. With each character, they part of it helps that they come from the book, too, because the book provides a lot more characterization to inform the actor, I guess. But every character feels so alive. Even the sister, Connie, feels alive as a character. Diane Keaton's character feels alive. The mother feels alive when she starts singing with the band. And all, but every single character in the movie feels so fleshed out and fully realized, which I think is like really part of what makes it so compelling.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because now that I think about it, yeah, like really, like all the characters are really well fleshed out, and like you could just kind of like all the characters are memorable.
All of them are memorable. Like, you don't... Tom Haken, Connie. I call her Diane Keaton, but Kay is who I mean. The mother, Vito, Tessio.
Robert Duvall. What was that?
Robert Duvall. Yeah. No.
just Robert Duvall.
Talia Shire. No. But yeah, it really is great. I mean, ugh, it's so good. I feel like most of this podcast is just us being like, it's so good. But it really is just so good.
Yeah.
Special shout out to Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando. The goat.
He's so good. Ugh.
Like, he's the one that, like, really stands out in this movie. Just because he's just, like, so bizarre. Like, he really is just so bizarre. Like, he seems almost sort of, like...
on drugs.
Well, no, not even that, like, but, like, he's, like, an alien, like, pretending to be a mafia.
You think so?
Man, almost. I don't know.
Why does he give you an odd vibe?
Like, he's just weird. Like,
but you can't articulate why you think he's weird.
No, yeah. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's fantastic. Like, his performance, like, one of the best, like, of all time. I'm just saying, like, what I think makes his performance so.
It just seems a little bit, like, larger than life in the way that, you know, he speaks to people and the way that, you know, that he moves. It's like, it's, I don't know how to explain it. Like, he's like, not jaded, not like a confident jaded or something like that. I don't know. Like, very, very world weary, very, I don't know, secure in his position within the family. But, you know, he's just like, I don't know. This is like the introduction, I guess, of a sort of like mob culture to a lot of folks. And, you know, seeing Marlon Brando as Vito, like, it's just, you really got the sense that, like, you know, this is a man who has seen and done some things, but, you know, just tries to keep it a secret. You know, it's that, you know, that this thing of ours is very hush-hush about it. I don't know. It's like, you kind of just, I don't know, you ever just kind of, like, walk into, like, you ever just find yourself in a situation, you just, like, look at some certain people and, like, Yeah, I know that person, you know, I guess you could say that, like, looking at Vito Corleone, it's like, you know, he looks like trouble.
Yeah. I mean, that scene at the beginning has been parodied so many times in so many movies. I remember Rugrats in Paris parodied the first scene.
Did it really?
Yeah, you know, when Vito has the cat on his lap.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, even in a freaking children's movie, they're, like, paying homage to The Godfather.
Well, it's paid homage even in the graphic novel of Batman The Long Halloween, where, like, it literally opens up the same way as this movie. Like, instead of the guy saying, "I believe in America," it's Bruce Wayne saying, "I believe in Gotham City," or something like that. And literally, like, there's, like, certain, like, stills that they take from the movie and they, like, recreate it in the beginning. And it's just really funny to me. But yeah,
it's very funny. What I think is very interesting is that, and, you know, I've heard this through other people who've told me, is mafia people love the movie because they think it glamorizes everything. So, yeah. Like, rather than, you know, the Italian mob really hated the idea of the movie being made. When the movie was in production, many people tried to get it stopped. Frank Sinatra hated the fact that the character of Johnny, what's his name again? Fontaine, was based on him. He didn't like the fact that there was going to be a character based on him, so he tried to get the movie shut down. And later, when the mob saw the movie in the theater, they were like, "This is amazing. This makes us look so good."
Coppola won the hearts of everybody after that, even the mafia.
I mean, yeah, I still absolve Michael of his sins. Yeah, for this one, I don't know. He does it to protect his family, and his family killed Sonny. They basically shot the dad. I mean, you're acting like these other crime families didn't attack the Corleone.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. It's just that, like,
like, don't get all Gandhi on me. An eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. Meh.
No, the thing is that what I find interesting is that throughout the movie, all the characters are like, "Oh, it's not personal, it's just business." But it's like, it really is personal.
Of course though. It's personal. How can it not
as be much as they like to deny it, it is personal. You know, and don't, like, I don't believe for one second that, you know, Michael didn't kill those people at the end.
Oh, obviously.
Not because it was personal, you know?
You know what also just strikes me about, like, the callousness at which they treat life a little bit? Like, these are real people who died. Like, Sonny really got shot up. Same with, you know, the dad and stuff. And it's just, like, it's all about making money. Like, is the money that these mafiosos make really worth, like, their close family and friends dying? Like, that's, I don't know. It just feels like such a waste.
I mean, it's a little bit more complicated than that.
I know. But it just feels like a waste when Sonny gets shot up. Every time he gets shot up, I'm just like, oh no.
Mm-hmm.
You hothead, you bastard. You cheater.
I mean, there was no way he could have really anticipated that coming, though. Yeah. I remember that when I first saw that scene, I was so shocked when I saw it.
Right?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It's like all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, just all these guys
come out and just shoot him. He outscored Scorsese. That's a nice thing there. I mean, everybody says Scorsese is the king of the gangster movie. I disagree.
I mean, I think The Godfather is probably the best gangster movie to ever be made.
Yeah, you're mentioning kind of like the callousness of it, right? It's
no, but it's the way they treat human life. Like, people just kill they all just kill each other with reckless abandon. Every time I watch the movie, I'm always astounded at the way that they don't think twice about, like, just doing something so reprehensible. Like,
death is so easy.
Like, but death is so easy. Like, really, the guy thought, he said, you know, I'm going to put a bomb on this car so Michael's wife can drive the car and she'll get blown up. But, like, nobody even thinks about the moral implications of doing something so heinous. They just do it. Where I would like to think that people today would, like, think.
I mean, these characters are so desensitized to, like, any.
But they're so flawed, you know. They're, like, yeah, they're desensitized, they're flawed. Do you think that's what makes them human, though, that they're flawed? Like, do you empathize with the characters because of their flaws at all? Or do you find them all gross and reprehensible?
You empathize well, I wouldn't even say empathize. You sympathize a little bit with the Corleones just because you're put in their shoes for the film. And you know them the best out of any of the other characters in the movie. So that's why you feel a very loose sympathy for them.
Jack says, I mean, you don't smile at the scene when Connie's son is getting baptized.
Oh, well, that, like, just...
Michael, I mean, that scene is truly a masterwork of cinema. I mean, that, to me, is one of the best scenes in the entire movie. And the juxtaposition of everybody getting whacked while they're speaking in Latin in the church during the Mass, and he's getting christened as the Godfather.
I mean, that's one of the greatest, like, probably one of the greatest endings to any movie ever, just because of, like, the juxtaposition of, like, what's going on, like, between, like, what Michael is doing at that moment and what he's ordered his men to do to the other heads of the families. Just,
yeah.
Like, just him being at just the idea of, like, him doing something holy while also doing something really unholy at the same time. So,
yeah.
I don't know. What's your take on it, Keith?
I mean, the ending of it, like, it's, you know, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but, like, you know, just growing up in, like, high school or whatever, you know, I always felt like, you know, there was always somebody who knew somebody is like, oh, yeah, no, my cousin's in the mob, like, don't fuck with them. And, like, you know, it was always, like, this sort of, like, this thing that was just sort of, like, not that it was, like, unspoken. I mean, you know, these are just loudmouth high school kids that I'm talking to. I'm like, all right, yeah, whatever. Your cousin's going to shoot a high school student, whatever. But, you know, I think the concept was there is that you just, there are just some people that you just don't fuck with. And they'll go there. They will go there and not even think about it. Like, I mean, the ending of, you know, him being christened as the Godfather while, you know, all this death is, and like he is like cemented himself as like the crime boss. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily think that like, you know, at the end of it, like he was trying to defend his family, and I don't think he necessarily did anything that was like really truly unprovoked, but there's just so much like, you know, double speak and double talk that's going on. I mean, you know, one of the things that like I kind of think about a lot in terms of that. And, you know, like, I guess, you know, some of one of the themes of it is, I guess, the ends justify the means.
Do and, they, do they?
And then, you know, I think about, you know, the famous Italian philosopher Niccolo Machiavelli. there was a quote that he had in one of his books called Prince, and, essentially,
the Little Prince, right? Yeah.
No, not the Little Prince. Not the Little Prince.
Wait, that's a different one, right?
That's a kid's book.
No, who wrote The Little Prince?
It was Frank.
What the fuck?
No, we need to do this. So
The Little Prince was written by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. Oh, The Little Prince is different than The Prince? Really? This whole time I thought they were the same fucking parable, the same book.
Anyway, Keith, what are your point?
I'm a moron.
It's okay. It's okay.
Jack is laughing. what's the one where like it's better to be feared than loved? Like that's what the Prince is, right?
That's
like the Machiavelli from the Prince. That whole thing. See, I thought that and the Little Prince were like the same thing. I really did. I thought this whole time. I'm like, yeah, Machiavelli wrote that book, The Little Prince. Oh, God. Because I thought it's coming to Broadway, right? The Little Prince. And I was thinking, oh, Machiavelli on Broadway. This is, like, very classy. I thought, oh, they're not going to get a lot of tourists for this show. This is a little too highbrow.
Yeah, right?
For them. Anyway. Anyway, Keith.
But essentially the passage in The Prince, it just sort of goes on, you know, and kind of just about like a lot of the political culture that was going on in Renaissance Italy at the time. And, the idea was is that you can't be a moral man in an immoral society. And that's the kind of the thing that I, you know, dovetailing into the ends justify the means, like, you know, like he had to do what he had to do. You know, there's no doubt about it, that Michael Corleone just had to, you know, make things right for himself and for his family. And, you know, if there was like a sort of like a shred of morality and stuff like that. And that's really just the thing that gets me is like, you really kind of just how far people will go to do what they need to do and protect
Michael, my theory is Michael had morality until Sonny got killed. I think when Sonny died, that really changed him as a character. And that's when he was like, fuck it, I'm doing whatever I want. Because at the beginning of the movie, he tells Kay, he's like, in 5 years, the family is going to be legitimate and all. Mm-hmm. But he totally is like, yeah, right. Like, after Sonny gets shot up, he's kind of like,
well, not just Sonny, but then his wife.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's like a couple seconds after he gets that news. It's like,
yeah, totally forgot about her. It's
like a double whammy.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. What is today's day? Is today Wednesday or Thursday?
Wednesday.
Oh. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, the quotes, I mean, I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the insanely quotable lines from this movie. I mean, I have my own favorites, but...
I mean, I know I saw you looking up the, you bastard,
no, because I just want to do that monologue quickly. Keith, you lousy bastard, you killed my husband. You waited until Papa died so no one could stop you, then you killed him. You blamed him for Sonny, you always did, everybody did. But you never thought about me, you never gave a damn about me. I love that monologue from Connie at the end, that's great. Take the gun,
leave the gun.
Leave the gun, take the cannoli. It's great. You know, there's so many good lines. Make him an offer he can't refuse. I love that one. What else?
It's not personal, it's just business.
Not personal, it's just business.
People use that in real life all the time, though. I mean, it just shows, like, as a culture, how the movie has pervaded. Revenge is a dish best served cold. That's interesting. You talk about vengeance. Is vengeance going to bring your son back to you? Or is it going to me?
One thing that I always do wonder, though, is, like, did Vito and Michael plan on having the heads of those families killed, or was that purely just a Michael decision?
I think it was a Michael decision. That's what I think.
What do you think, Keith?
I think that was a Michael decision too.
Yeah, I kind of lean more towards that myself. Although I don't know, like I feel like Vito was so smart that like he could have concocted that plan before he died with Michael.
That's a great, this is a great little exchange. Oh, I love that. My father is no different than any powerful man, any man with power, like a president or a senator. And then Diane Keaton, do you know how naive you sound, Michael? Presidents and senators don't have men killed. That's a great line. I mean, it's just, it's so smartly written, like the dialogue flows so well, the actors bounce so well off each other. I mean, oh, it's just so good. It's so fucking good. Diane Keaton once liked an Instagram comment I left on her post. It's just funny.
Yeah. No way.
She actually did, yeah. It was nice. Something ridiculous. Like she posted a photo of her in like one of her famous suits, and I'm like, slay girl, and she like liked it.
I remember being really surprised when I saw that she was, like, when I first saw the movie and I saw that she was in it, because I had already known her, like, because I think the first thing I ever saw her in was Father of the Bride, which is like the complete opposite of this movie. So I, growing up, I always knew her as like the mom from that.
Father of the Bride is like so sanitized compared to
like,
this.
I mean, I just knew her as the mom from that movie. But then when I saw that she had been in The Godfather, I was like, wait, she's in this also?
Yeah. Oh, don't get me started on a tangent about Father of the Bride. That movie gets me like upset beyond belief.
To each his own.
No, the second one annoys me. Because it's like, okay. How could the mother and daughter really be pregnant at the same time? That's so, like, far-fetched. I mean, it's just... I mean, I guess that could happen.
It can.
I guess.
It can. So, yeah, I mean, just... I appreciate just getting the chance to watch it and, you know, watching it for the first time. I feel like it's a movie that you know, most American adults should watch.
You know, every once in a while, a rare movie comes along where it's like, you watch it and you're like, that is how it should be done. It's like seeing the Mona Lisa for the first time, or like hearing Fur Elise, or like, I don't know. What, or hearing like, I don't know, what's like an example of like a really good piece of music?
I'm very like partial to
The Rite of Spring or something. I don't know.
To what?
Like The Rite of Spring, like Stravinsky. It would be like hearing something crazy for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just like, yeah, that's how it's done.
Exactly. It's
often imitated, never duplicated. The Godfather.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? Because, like, you know, just thinking about it, like, how many more spinoffs of that really, you know, were there? Or at least, like, some sort of mob influences.
Well, Goodfellas really reminds me of The Godfather, but that Scorsese, of course, has his own style that's different than Francis Ford.
And, you know, I think without The Godfather, I don't think that Scorsese would be really even a factor. It was just, you know, just one of those influential things. Like, the historical impact of it is cannot be understated. Or is it overstated? I'm not sure. I'm tripping up words exactly.
Yeah. What age definitely. Would you let your child watch this movie?
Don't let your child watch this movie. Don't rent out a theater for a 3-hour movie.
My grandma has the book, and the book is like 800 pages. Like, it's a really long book. It's like longer than Harry
Potter, I think. I mean, I've read the book
as
well.
Oh, you have? So. Oh, you have, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's interesting about the book is that it's one of those examples where it's like the movie is better because everything that the movie cuts out from the book isn't needed. Like, I don't know, they go into more detail about like Johnny Fontaine and stuff, and it's like, we don't care about Johnny Fontaine. We only care about the Corleone family. So, this has been Cinemaniac Jack. I'm your host, Jack. Today's guest co-hosts were John and Keith.
Bye.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. See you next time.